I'm joined by the blogger Carl Sharrow, who's a London-based architect, but is currently in Beirut. Carl Lakhdar Brahimi is in Beirut for talks with the president today. How do you see his latest calls for some kind of ceasefire? Any chance of success at all?
No, not at all. I think, he started off when he accepted his mission by saying how nearly impossible it is. And I think it's purely in the realm of cosmetics for all the actors involved to say that there's something that's being done about the Syrian crisis. But in fact, if you see the people who are kind of intending Lakhdar Brahimi to carry out this job are the same people who are fueling the fire in Syria. So I don't think you can expect much from that.
You've criticized the West's position as sort of unpredictable and erratic. Any change?
There's a lack of a clear policy by the West, and it's quite clear with the U.S. position in particular, where you see this reluctant meddling being carried out. So there isn't a clear sense of committing to arming the rebels, and at the same time, there isn't the intention to kind of find a peaceful solution very quickly. And I think that reflects the lack of a broader strategic vision for the Middle East, and we saw how that kind of played out to a certain extent in Libya before, but certainly in Iraq. And now we're seeing the consequences of that in Syria, and the kind of the broad confusion and lack of a clear vision for policy towards Syria by the U.S. and the international community. I think it's making matters worse, and by consequence, makes Lakhdar Brahimi's mission again more of a cosmetic attempt at saying we're trying to do something.
Do you think there'll be any difference at all after the U.S. presidential election, whoever wins?
No, because I've paid very close attention to what Romney has been saying. And interestingly, I wrote in one of my articles about the kind of the shattered remains of U.S. Middle East policy, which was picked up by some conservative publications. And they were sort of using my argument to say that Obama doesn't have a vision. But then you examine Romney's proposal, and it seems to be more of the confused same. So kind of reactive, knee-jerk, meddling process that has no clear kind of sense of purpose to it, and by consequence is more damaging because it asks for more intervention and more meddling and more hands-on approach, which hasn't served the U.S. very well at all in the past 20 years. So I think that's not going to change at all and might actually go for the worse, in the sense that if Romney thinks he needs to show that he's doing something and then opts for the wrong choice, that obviously, as we've seen in the past, how that can complicate matters further.
You've also criticized the structural failings of the Syrian National Council. Are you seeing any signs that they're addressing that?
Again, I wish I could say something optimistic about that, but we keep hearing about this kind of restructuring initiative that again seem to be purely brand orientated or kind of a cosmetic attempts and showing a sort of initiative at pulling together all the strands within the Syrian opposition. But you keep seeing there's a lack of a consistent message, there's a lack of leadership qualities that are shown particularly by the SNC, and a clear vision for what they want Syria to be. And the biggest example you can give of that, there are huge swathes of Syria now that are not under government control, are open for the Syrian National Council to go back and administer them and run them and try to build an alternative political force within Syria, but it's not doing that. And that's, to me, the clearest indication of their lack of political will and their lack of initiative. They're simply disconnected from the real activists and the real kind of a grassroots organization that is emerging from the ground.
Do you think that's at all practically possible for them to do, and how would that take the conflict forward?
I mean, why not? You look at examples from history in the past where basically any kind of alternative political force that's trying to unseat a long-standing power would seize on any opportunity or any opening to kind of galvanize its political support. For sure, that political support is not going to happen in Paris or in D.C. They will only get the kind of sort of vague promises and oversight offered by the U.S. and the West and the international community. But that's not the way to offer an alternative for the Syrian people. And it has been going on for 20 months, and a lot of people are saying, well, we're nearly giving up now. There's a sense of reluctance, and they don't necessarily support the regime, but they want clarity from the opposition. What is the alternative? What is this kind of form of leadership? What is this taking Syria to? And the SNC and people like that are kind of failing to provide that answer. So why not try something different? Why not seize the initiative? Why not try to overcome this? There are practical problems with it, but if there's political will, you can see how things can be overturned. But you don't see any attempt at doing that. We've seen very few visits by SNC leaders that are kind of in a clandestine manner to Syria, and they celebrate them after spending a few hours over there. Well, that's not going to shift anything anytime soon.
Are there any credible leaders or figures who could lead such a government inside Syria?
I think there's something very interesting happening between the kind of the armed wings that loosely termed the FSA collectively and the local coordination committees. There's certainly localized leaderships emerging. But because we're not looking at your traditional form of revolution with a specific political platform that ties people together and a kind of broad national organization, it will take time for them to go from the local to the national level of leadership. But here is where you contemplate all these people that are kind of pouring money into Syria, and some of it is kind of helping certain effective groups of rebels, but a lot of it is politicized and conditional, and you look at the money coming from the Gulf, it's not necessarily going to the groups that represent the best future of Syria. So you go and talk to these people, and from what we've heard from reporters on the ground, is basically they're saying, well, here we are, we don't have the bullets, this other group is getting all the funding, and we can't do anything about it, so our efficacy is very limited. And the same thing happens not only on the military side, on the political side. So the people that are able to provide support and services and replace what's been lost, they will need the financing for that. And again, that's going to the wrong sorts of groups. So you come to a certain extent where you say, even if all that kind of financing were to be cut off, it's probably better, because then people will have to rely on themselves, and then genuinely you wouldn't distort that grassroots kind of initiative. So yes, there is a hope, but the problem is that Syria is becoming now such a contentious space for all the regional power to kind of intervene in. That's certainly frustrating any indigenous attempts at creating leaderships that could take Syria to an alternative future.
Could members of the current regime or the defectors play any part in an alternative government? I'm thinking of people like Manaf Tlass or the Vice President Farouk al-Sharra, who's been reported under house arrest.
Yes, I think what's very important is any future political transition for it not to happen along confessional lines, as in either a confessional form of deal like what happened in Lebanon or a complete breakdown along sectarian lines. So you need those sort of figures that have a sense of continuity. Now, that's not going to appease many things that would say we didn't start a revolution for figures from the old regime to continue. But the sad part of the matter is, this wasn't a kind of, it didn't take a form of a traditional revolution. It has a very clear set of ideas about what it wants, and then it can sweep away all that exists and replace it with something new. Sadly, that hasn't happened. What is there now is there's discontent, and people know that this regime is illegitimate. They don't want it, but there is no alternative. So because we're at that picture, it's absolutely essential that there is some form of continuity, and many people will oppose that, but it's essential to avoid what happened in Iraq. I mean, you can't void all of a sudden all the state institutions from the people that are leading them. And here, where I think people like al-Sharra probably are far more important than Tlass, who wasn't a politician anyway. But al-Sharra, because of his long kind of years with the Ba'ath Party and with the state, and because he's certainly could represent a figure of sort of where consensus, a figure of consensus. Tlass is sort of hinting at a similar position, but I don't think he has the political credentials to carry that. I mean, many people don't take him seriously. Now, the point is behind all of that is you want to ask the question, would Syria rather face 5-10 years of the sort of all-consuming conflict that's increasingly becoming sectarian in certain areas? Or would you rather have a political solution that allows a transition to a better future but doesn't mean at all that Bashar al-Assad and his circle stay in power? So that's the question that Syrians have to answer for themselves. But I think there's sort of, from a purely rational, objective point of view, I'd say, probably because the military insurgency isn't necessarily kind of leading to a fast resolution of this conflict, maybe the political transition with figures like Sharrah would actually be the best solution at the moment.
What do you think the most likely thing is that's going to happen in the last, in the next 6 months or so?
Well, I don't think you can even frame it in those terms because, I mean, strangely enough, I was discussing this with someone because I lived through the Lebanese War, 15 years of it, and, you know, you look back, it's sort of, yes, maybe in the next 6 months, maybe in the next year, and then you see your frame kind of extending, and then before you know it, it's 15 years, and you kind of, you don't even know how that happened. So the worrying thing is I see something similar happening in Syria. And because of one very important similarity is the clarity of the dynamics of the conflict starts to disappear. And that's what happened in Lebanon. And you see a similar thing happening in Syria now and developing. So you see a lot of people that want the change, but they're not satisfied by the way that it's happening. So it's kind of, you see this almost acceptance of the fact that the conflict is becoming more of a situation of normalcy, and perhaps this is something that people should learn to live with. I mean, of course, they should never do that, but this is how situations of civil war happen. So the problem for me is if that legitimate, authoritative, political leadership doesn't emerge within the ranks of the opposition, we're looking not at 6 months, we're looking at probably 5 more years of this with nobody being able to take the initiative to resolve it. And if that doesn't happen from the opposition itself, if it's imposed from the outside via the United Nations or any other body, then it would definitely frustrate the aspirations of the Syrian people. And we've seen that in the past because it won't be about fundamental political change. It will be just about stopping the fighting now, but keeping all the dynamics of the situation in their place, keeping all the institutions in place, and that certainly can't bode very well for Syria. So we keep coming back to that point. The opposition needs to produce credible political leadership with a very clear vision and a narrative about where it wants to take Syria, for it to kind of carry the day and carry the moment and be able to conclude this in a way that's very positive for Syria rather than to oversee protracted civil war.
Is there anything that the international community can do to encourage such an opposition movement and avoid the kind of Lebanization of Syria?
Well, there's many things they can do, but as I hinted before, or as I said before, if you look at the different kind of parties, you look at Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, America, Britain, I mean, everybody's involved in Syria now. You see that their efforts are almost kind of going in completely different directions. And I think the more they carry on doing what they are doing now, they're simply making matters more complicated and kind of fueling the fire more. So I think in a way it's probably a very wise thing, not that I think it will happen, but to de-internationalize the Syrian conflict and to apply pressure on governments like Saudi Arabia that are funding Salafi groups within Syria that are not helping at all, to stop doing that and allow kind of a more organic form of political conflict to emerge. That probably ultimately will be much better for Syria. Because quite frankly, and we've seen for 20 months now, all the international community can offer is a very confused form of intervention with unworkable plans. And we've seen that with Kofi Annan. And they didn't even have, from the least that we've seen, any genuine political will behind them. So I'm at the point where the international community actually is doing more damage by intervening in all the forms that it's doing than if it were to kind of step out from the conflict. So I think it's probably it's a much better option for Syria now to try to de-internationalize the conflict and stop kind of distorting the dynamics within, particularly through who the arms are going to and who the financing is going to.
A very gloomy vision, but thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, no, you're most welcome.